Hello and welcome to The Natural View. I'm Maggie Jacqua. I'm the content director of Whole Foods Magazine. And my co-host, as always, is Todd Polley of 24 Stories Marketing. Hi, Todd.
Hi, Maggie. Great to see you.
Good to see you, too. We have a special guest today. We have Sean Baer. He's the VP of Business Development, Innovative Product Division at TSI Group. Welcome, Sean.
Thank you so much. Appreciate the invite to be here.
Well, we're happy to have you here because we're going to talk about a really hot, trending topic, which is healthy aging, active aging, and some science-backed support that can help us kind of live our best lives. So we're here for it. This is what we want. So let's just dive in. We want to talk about how we kind of stay youthful as we age, and muscle health is really important to a proactive approach, right? Can you kind of talk us through the importance of muscle health?
Sure. You know, we look so many times at the various categories. When we think about aging, we look at joint health, we look at cognitive health, and even probably the one that grew the biggest and fastest was bone health, with the awareness of bone density and osteoporosis. But the one thing I think has been overlooked at in our industry is really muscle health as an aging category, because there's so much focus of it on more of the sport nutrition and performance nutrition. But in reality, you know, none of us are going to get away without experiencing significant muscle loss as we age. Not everybody will experience changes in bone density that preclude function or can open up for fracture. Not everybody's going to experience joint degradation to a point where it's a disability. Not everybody's going to experience all these other things, but it's inevitable. You're going to experience muscle loss. So I think it's a category that's really growing, is that muscle health category away from just sport nutrition, performance nutrition kind of supplements. And I do think it's something that is incredibly important, because right now, if you look at the way the marketing is being done around muscle health, it primarily the products and the focus is on protein. But protein is, it's the building blocks. It's not the trigger to stimulate the protein actually building and minimizing the protein breakdown.
That makes sense. And Sean, let me just say, I can't speak for Maggie, but I love when these podcasts line up directly in my demographic. So I just use this as a personal, okay, let's talk about what I need to be doing, right? Because, HMB has traditionally been used or been thought of as something that, bodybuilders use, that sort of really strict traditional sports nutrition category definition. Mm-hmm. But I understand, as we're talking about healthy aging today and people who work out regularly and are aging, what are some of the benefits there? Like, how do you change that perception and talk about it for a broader audience as we talk about aging into, the twilight years or maybe middle age to, longer, where you really want to stay mobile, you really want to keep up with your family and do all the things you dream of doing. How does that all work for a more general population?
That's a great question, Todd, because, you bring up a key point. HMB has historically been into the extremes of what I would consider the muscle health or the nutritional supplementation world. And what I mean by that is it's been on the bodybuilding performance side, but it's also been very, very important to clinical nutrition. So maintaining muscle during cancer cachexia, age-related muscle loss, even bed rest and post surgical recovery. So, and that data is a very robust data set. And there's a tremendous data set around the performance nutrition or the bodybuilder and the strength athlete. So, your question really comes down to is, I think it's addressed the mechanism action of HMB. So as I mentioned before with protein, just delivering protein doesn't necessarily turn on that machinery in the direction we want. So we have to think about not only those two extremes I mentioned, but what is the process of these muscle changes that happens? If you look just at the muscle itself, what we typically see is a decrease in protein synthesis as we age, and we see an increase in protein breakdown. And fortunately for us, HMB works directly on those two pathways. So HMB has been shown to increase protein synthesis while at the same time, this is the important part, because it's the only nutritional intervention that does both. It actually reduces the protein breakdown. So if you think of this net balance as a very sensitive scale, if you will, and if I don't address both sides of it, I really am working against myself. So even if I can increase protein synthesis a little bit, if I haven't changed that degradation side for the aging individual, I'm not really going to have a tremendous impact. It'll impact, but not to the same scale. So if we can get both of them to shift into balance or even a little bit net so they gain, then not only can we maintain muscle mass, but we can also potentially restore some that's been lost. And that was really our focus on the more medical nutritional applications or the clinical nutrition outcomes, as well as what our focus has been on the sport performance. But to the general consumer, as we age, you know, I'm in my 50s. So when I look at aging, I'm thinking, oh, that's something, that's my parents' problem. It's all a muscle reserve. When we get to about the ages of, you know, 28 to 35, somewhere in there, we're reaching our peak, not physical performance peak, even though a lot of people, you know, 18 to 28 is that window. And as I sadly say that, but the reality is you can do a lot to impact that muscle reserve, both function and mass as we age. So setting up the stage with a healthy lifestyle in our early 20s and 30s is great. But more importantly, if we're losing, which we do, 10 to 15% per decade, that equals, you know, 1 to 1.5% per year. It's that little trickle that we're losing, right? So mm-hmm. if we can somehow mitigate some of that loss while maintaining a greater amount of protein synthesis with HMB, then it becomes so applicable across all stages of life. So yes, the individual who's performance driven, who wants to be on a stage or be on a platform or compete in an arena, whatever they're doing, that they want that extra edge, HMB is great. But for those individuals that are trying to set that long-term muscle health, you know, you look at it as the active lifestyle. They're not looking at it to be the next, you know, bodybuilder on the stage, or they're not looking at, you know, winning the next 100 at a competitive USATF meet. The reality is they just want to enjoy their daily function and they want the exercise to be a health benefit. So as we age, what typically happens is not only do we have these physiological changes that occur, but we also have things that kind of get taken away from us. So as we lose muscle mass, it becomes this kind of like snowball effect, because once we start to lose muscle mass, our desire and our effort, you know, around that activity, we would love to keep doing it. It's just a little bit harder. Therefore, it becomes less enjoyable. So that starts to cascade, because once you start doing less activity, guess what? You lose more muscle. So then it just stair steps down. If we can do something, a nutritional intervention, first of all, you know, we have to make sure nutrition isn't just about a dietary supplement. It's, you know, quality, you know, macro, micro nutrient, you know, watching what we eat, doing those healthy things. But most importantly is, you know, staying active. Some people can't. And if you can't stay active, you know, you don't have the physical ability or access, you know, one thing we can do in addition to, you know, proper nutrition is dietary supplementation. And just adding protein to the story isn't enough. There's still part of that problem that exists. And that problem, that key, is HMB.
Well, interesting. And like, I totally agree with what Todd said. Like, I'm also taking mental notes about personal benefits here.
This is what I do too. So
at the end, this is just Maggie and I's little podcast. I love it longer. So.
So I know, you know, you're talking about kind of changing perceptions and understanding, and research is a big part of this. And there was just a clinical study. We reported on it in Whole Foods Magazine. It was published in Nutrients. And it looked at HMB in combination with vitamin D3. So can you talk us through some of the outcomes there and why the vitamin D combination?
Sure. So the research really stemmed, as I mentioned before, the clinical side. This was back in the late 1990s. We started doing work, you know, more and more on the clinical nutrition. And then from there, we started looking at, you know, ways we could expand. And clearly we identified, you know, muscle loss that occurs with age. So we started researching that. And what we found in one of our studies was that there was a small group of individuals that, although they showed increases in muscle mass, we didn't quite see the same change in function. So we started doing some additional analysis and really looking through the literature, and we just couldn't figure it out. And then it was one of those things where we kind of had that aha moment. We stumbled upon kind of doing some secondary analysis. We were looking at vitamin D because we were doing some additional work with another project looking at vitamin D status. And we realized there was actually a correlation between those individuals that didn't have the increase in muscle function as they saw, as we observed with the muscle mass in this older adult population with HMB supplementation. And we found out it was directly correlated to their vitamin D status. So taking that from a retrospective analysis to proactive approach through an NIH study, year-long study, we're able to discover that when vitamin D is sufficient. So we're not just talking about, you know, the level to prevent like rickets. We're talking about, you know, that sufficiency at that 25 nanograms per mil kind of level versus their 25 hydroxy. So when you're getting at 25 to 30 on that level, now just put it in perspective, you know, you can start seeing incidents of true bone density issues and some of these other real deficiency signs and symptoms down in the low teens, single digits. So we're not talking about just being above deficiency. We're talking about the sufficiency level. And we're seeing it more and more in the vitamin D research. We're seeing it in everything from cardiovascular function to even some work in oncology patients, and as well as what we saw during COVID with people talking about that sufficient vitamin D status. So again, going back to that literature or that study, we found that vitamin D, once it was sufficient and with HMB, not only was it a improvement in muscle mass, there's improvement in function and strength and those other markers of I guess I would say muscle, the ability of muscle to perform work. And, you know, might ask, well, why does that really matter? And this is the key part, is because, you know, so many individuals, you know, they experience these changes and the perception, as I mentioned before, it's such a small little change over time. That perception and function, we look at it as just, oh, I've gotten older and I'm just not as physically able to do this stuff. But, you know, when doing some of our studies, what we observed with the subjects in the studies, they would talk about things like energy. And I know in our industry, energy is a very much, you know, used term, but we're not talking about stimulant energy. We're not talking about food as fuel energy. We're talking about a perception. So we kept digging in with some of these subjects after the study was done, was trying to figure out what they meant. And what was really interesting is the feedback we got, and it goes right back to why function is so important, is because they would say things like, oh, it just was easier to go up a flight of stairs. Or when I tried to carry a bag of groceries in, it was easier. So I feel like I have more energy. And it was that, you know, another one of those aha moments where you're like, oh, they're not talking about energy. That's strength and function. Mm-hmm. So one of the biggest complaints an older adult goes into their doctor and talks about is this lack of energy. Reality is it's a lack of strength. So it's one thing for HMB to increase muscle mass, but it's important that we see the change in not just mass, but also in function and strength. So then the individual who's regaining or at least experiencing that maintenance, the perception again goes back to they feel like they can do more. And that goes right back to longevity. Do we want to live longer or do we want a high quality of life longer? Yeah. And I think the high quality of life, and that's where I think this healthy approach to aging is getting more and more momentum, is because people do see that. They see it in their parents, they see it in their grandparents, and they look at it and say, okay, now that's not what I want from longevity. I want quality of life with longevity. And that's why I think nutritionally, both, you know, the macro micronutrient approach and then supplementation, as well as an active lifestyle, if you have access. And the other thing in that study that was so important was that we observed that without exercise, there was an exercise arm and a non-exercise arm. Even without exercise, we saw improvements in muscle mass and function, primarily function and strength, which is incredibly important because although we'd like to think that we're all going to be compliant and everybody out there in the general health has the same goals we might have on this podcast right now of living an active lifestyle, so many people don't because of access, or they don't because they don't have the ability. And we even see it in bed rest studies with HMB that you can maintain muscle even times of inactivity. So again, it goes back to turning on that machinery the right direction, increasing protein synthesis and reducing protein breakdown.
That's so interesting. I like your focus on the quality of aging versus just aging. Like it's not a race. It's about how you're getting there, right?
Exactly.
What it feels like. So let's turn a little bit and talk about actually taking HMB. Can you give us some guidance on recommended dosage and also delivery formats, you know, especially within the topic of talking healthy aging and some of those older adults? I mean, how much should we be taking and in what formats are there available?
Sure. Most of our sport nutrition studies, you'll see 3 grams per day. And that is, we recommend 2 to 3 servings, you know, across the day. So 1 to 1.5 grams per serving. Now, in some of our older adult studies, we've gone as low as 2 grams per day. So, you know, obviously my recommendation is, you know, a minimum of 2 grams per day, typically split between 2 doses. And for optimal results, to really make sure and ensure that you're turning on that machinery in the right direction and minimizing that breakdown, really is it's 3 grams. So there are products out there that have, you know, 1.5, 1 gram. So it's, you know, you can do a serving, you know, 2 to 3 times per day, and it works out fairly well. So going to the form, you know, the most, you know, we have, that's the beauty of H&B. There's a lot, it's been out there for a while. There's a lot of different products. There's everything from dry powder drink mixes to there's an infused water with H&B. And I bring that up simply because we have 2 forms of H&B on the market, the calcium H&B salt, which is a dry white powder. And then we have the H&B free acid, which is H&B by nature is a liquid. So when we created the original, you know, H&B supplement, it was, or the original H&B product, it was calcium H&B. So it was very easy to work with. You could put it into drink mixes. You could put it into, you know, capsules and tablets. And then doing some research, it was another one of those, again, I use this a lot, this aha moment where we thought the H&B free acid would, or the calcium H&B would just associate the H&B free acid. And what we discovered was that there's some different pharmacokinetics. We did all the additional safety and toxicity work to make sure it's still safe, which it is, but it just has a little bit rapid absorption and a better area under the curve for the same amount of H&B. So why is that important? For so many people that are using it for exercise, they want to get the blood levels up quick before they exercise and then maintain. So that's where we recommend H&B free acid is more on the performance nutrition side. It's still a great product, you know, for like the product I was talking about, the infused water. It's a phenomenal product to take. You know, it's convenient. It's a water. It helps deliver the H&B in a very, you know, tasty way. And it's convenient because it's just drinking a bottle of water. But there's so many other products. You know, there's and you know, I bring up the H&B free acid because a company like MuscleTech has in their Clear Muscle product has a soft gel. And then we look at there's products that have calcium H&B. I know GNC has a great product. They just launched that's clearly more for the performance nutrition, and it has the calcium H&B in a protein drink mix. And there's numerous customers, you know, everybody has had the tablets and the capsules, so there's convenience there. And that's the beauty of H&B is it even, we have success with it being in bars over the years, ready to drink protein drinks like Abbott's Ensure has had it in their Enlive product, in their clinical nutrition product, and even in the Juven product, which is a dry powder drink mix. That is combined with amino acids and collagen. So we've seen H&B used in a lot of different platforms in 2 different forms. And we've had, you know, tremendous success. So I think looking at really from a dosing standpoint, it's what makes it convenient for you to take it daily. So we see people that have used, you know, the H&B can be mix and matched, right? So just because you're drinking it in this water, maybe you like drinking that for breakfast, or maybe you want to Ensure at night or Ensure for breakfast, and then, you know, a capsule at dinner. It can really be, you know, mix and match. So our website's great that way, the myhmb.com, because there's a place where you can find the various forms that are sold. We have great customers that we work with to ensure that the product is quality and make sure that they're getting the dosing that we recommend. So, So I think that probably covers it.
Yeah, that's totally. I wanted to ask you about formulation opportunities, and you just went through it all. I mean, many options.
Yeah.
And just to drive home the point that you made about it's really, you know, for the consumer finding what they're going to be able to keep in their routine to get the benefits. So
consistency is key. So many times we find that, you know, the more opportunities or more options the consumer has, the better. We've done some great work with gummies now. And it's funny because, you know, I always looked at it as when the gummies first came on the market, I looked at it and went, oh, it's kind of weird. It's like a children's product. But what do I absolutely love? I love the H&B free acid gummies we have because they taste good. Now, I probably should be careful. I'm probably taking a dose way bigger than I probably need. And there's no safety worry there. It's just more of the, you know, chewing on candy or something that's like a candy. You kind of get caught up, maybe taking too much that I probably don't, I'm just wasting it. But some of the innovations that are out there in our industry is great. There's, you know, our contract manufacturing division at TSI is doing these effervescent little beadlets, and they call it Fizzer. And it is so cool. They have a H&B vitamin D, and they look like little tiny, they're about the size of like half of a Tic Tac. I'm probably not doing it justice, but you know, for a visual, but it comes like in a stick pack and you dump it in and it does the effervescence. So you have almost like a carbonated drink that is flavored, lightly flavored. It's just a great concept. So I know that's in our company. And then I see so many things outside in our industry that, you know, from, you know, tablet people, you know, for years have been taking tablets and capsules, but now you see the liquid caps and you see the soft gels. So the variation I think is key, because what's our goal as an industry? Our goal should be to obviously encourage customers or consumers to take, but also provide them with some, you know, options. So there isn't a thing of pill fatigue. There isn't a thing of, oh, I'm just tired of another, you know, heavy drink. There's all these options. So you can kind of make it like we do with our meals every day. Our industry is doing a great job of giving we're looking for variability in delivery format. So you can make it, you can mix it up. Now, the only thing that does that is you got to make sure you're mindful of the dose, your ultimate dose you're getting. But if you're using it consistently, you're probably figuring that out and you have a nice platform. But yeah, I apologize. I kind of interrupted there, but I'm so excited about some of these delivery formats. They're just phenomenal that our industry is doing now.
Yeah. No, I want to leave the effervescent one for, oh, sorry, man. Go ahead.
No, I'm just saying the same thing you are. That effervescent sounds fabulous.
It's very cool.
I'm saving that one for the weekends, like when I get crazy.
Yeah, 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 exactly. It's a mixer.
Oh, man, now you've got me thinking about all kinds of possibilities. You've blown it wide open, Sean. Let's talk a little bit about oxidative stress and tell me what it is, what's the threat it could pose?
Sure. So, you know, we've recently, and I say recently, but this has actually been like almost a 10-year project. We've been doing a lot of research on a new ingredient. We refer to it as the brand name Hobamine, but it's 2-HOBA or 2-hydroxybenzylamine. Now you know why we call it Hobamine. It definitely is a little bit disruptive in nature. And we even the tagline for the product is a radical approach to oxidative stress. I mean, it's a little play on terms of the free radicals, but we look at kind of what happens and where oxidative stress comes from. You know, I'd like to think that we all live a very healthy, you know, life of moderation. But in reality, even if you can, we're exposed to so many external stressors. And that can be something as simple as, you know, sitting in the house or the room I'm sitting in right now, there's off-gassing. All those things that we are exposed to, whether it be pollution, be sun exposure, the food we eat, the alcohol, I know we were just joking about that, the alcohol we consume, everything that we do, you know, even energy metabolism produces, you know, oxidative stress. As long as we're in a relatively, I would say, low to moderate level of exposure, our body has the ability to process and do well with it. And I say that, if you notice, there's hesitation in my voice, because unfortunately, most of us, if not all of us, live on the moderate to high moderate to even excessive amount of formation. And where that comes from, again, is even too much exercise, too little exercise, stress, lack of sleep, all these things that we think of in you know, small amounts are probably not causing a problem. It's all cumulative. So when you put all these pieces together, you get this excessive oxidative stress. And where the problem comes from, and it's what's been probably, you know, the magic piece here that we just can't control until now, is this formation of, when you get this oxidative stress, you start getting this peroxidation of lipids. And from that, you create some very nasty compounds. One of them is what we refer to as an iso-LG or isolevoglandin. And once an iso-LG is formed, matter of fact, they're almost impossible to measure in our body because they have such a high affinity for their target site. And once they hit their target site, it can't be disconnected. And it does things from, you know, damaging proteins to, you know, the proteins of DNA, our cell membrane, various, you know, organelles within a cell, and ultimately leads to cell damage and premature aging. So we are exposed to this every time we have, you know, I was going to say excessive oxidative stress, but in reality, even moderate oxidative stress, you get a small amount of this being formed. So I really emphasize the point of how fast this, once this is made, it just disappears. And it doesn't disappear as it's metabolized and dealt with. It disappears because it latches on and forms an adduct with proteins in our cells. And once they're formed, they're very sticky. You cannot break them apart. So going back to two HOBA, why is this so important? Because two HOBA allows the system. We have a natural process, you know, of, you know, it's oxidative stress is dealt with, and we create, you know, these processes or these pathways that are there for normal physiological function and signaling. So if we try to disrupt them, or with antioxidants, we try and provide the necessary pieces, if you will, to keep the system working optimally. But the bottom line is that once there's this, you know, slightly higher than moderate to excessive levels, you get this formation of these iso-LGs. So what we've been talking about internally was, how do we position two HOBA? Because it is such a disruptive kind of approach to dealing with oxidative stress. Typically people say, well, take antioxidants. That doesn't really do what people think it's going to do. And even the literature is a little gray on the high amounts of antioxidants and what benefits it can provide. Keeping the system or the natural process in place is great, but we have to find a way to deal with this iso-LG. So again, here comes 2-HOBA. And how does 2-HOBA work? You know, simple, you know, ingestion of the product. Once you get it in the system, the blood levels go up, and it doesn't take a lot, because the reality is 2-HOBA, think of it as like sunscreen for your cells. As soon as an iso-LG is formed, what's really cool about 2-HOBA is it has it's over 1,000 times greater affinity for an iso-LG than it iso-LG has for its target spot. So I already said that you can't even measure them, they move so fast. The beauty is 2-HOBA becomes this lock and key that's sitting there waiting. So as long as you have 2-HOBA present, anything that is excess or anything that we can't naturally deal with in terms of that excessive oxidative stress, that we prevent those, let the iso-Gs form, right? Because it shows that the system's working. But once they're formed, rather than have them have these attack sites that they go after and do damage to our cells, now we can capture them and then metabolize them, because that byproduct of 2-HOBA connecting with an iso-LG is something our body can deal with no problem. And it's discarded, and we don't have to worry about the damaging effects of iso-LG. So it's completely a new approach to this excessive oxidative stress that we see. And on the flip side of it, where are we seeing this kind of, it's you know, well-researched on more of the clinical side in terms of what these iso-LGs can do, but they wreak havoc into so many different conditions and diseases. And again, I'm not making health claims here, because the 2-HOBA is working proactively, where we see the product of this formation, these iso-LGs, we see them in things like Alzheimer's, the plaques formation. We see it in arteriosclerosis. We see it in different fibrosis and pulmonary hypertension. We even see it in kind of that natural progression of the decline we see in like, I would say, like joint health and skin health, any cell type, right? So it's very foundational, because all cells, if they're exposed, have some detriment from being exposed to an iso-LG. So that's the iso-LG side. 2-HOBA is a scavenger of these iso-LGs. So once they're formed, you want to quickly capture them to prevent them from connecting and causing disruption down the line. So that's this new solution we have. And again, it's HOBAmine. It's really this radical approach to dealing with oxidative stress and minimizing that cellular damage.
So who's taking this? Who would be benefiting from taking this? Sounds like everybody. And how are you taking it?
Yeah, great question. So here's the, I'll tell you a little background story. This is really quick. So when we were researching this with the original discoverer at Vanderbilt University, I was sitting in a meeting and I asked the exact same question back. And he looked at me and smiled and he said, you know how they put fluoride in the drinking water? That's how 2-HOBA should be taken. And yeah. I kind of chuckled and said, well, good luck with that. You know, it's a tough enough challenge to work through the regulatory, you know, world in the various, you know, in the US and all these different countries. I said, I can't imagine what it'd take to get something in the drinking water. But to his point, you know, I'm joking about it, laughing about it, but his whole point was it's for everybody. It's for every cell, for everybody. There's obviously a little bit of play there in words, but it's reality, because if there's a potential for exposure, which we all have exposure to oxidative stress, you're better off having it present than not having it present. So if you can take that and be proactive in the approach, then you don't have to worry about those other elements of what happens, you know, after these addicts with iso-LG and these proteins are formed and all the other things that can go wrong after that, including just basic cellular damage and premature aging, because that's kind of a catch-all. But in reality, they're very specific damaging effects that can happen because the cells have exposure to ICVLGs. So really, we're positioning it right now is that, you're looking at it for that premature aging, cell health kind of consumer that's really interested in mitigating these effects. But the reality is all of us would benefit from it because we're all exposed. And that kind of brings me to the next line of research we're doing. We've been looking at these changes in biomarkers and we're seeing these improvements because a lot of times we don't realize that the oxidative stress that is created that makes these ICVLGs that causes this downstream, havoc to occur, that's an immunoinflammatory response our body's going to give to it. So what you end up getting then is an immune inflammatory response to this damage, and our body tries to, recover and protect itself. The problem is, as we know, inflammation in itself is an oxidative stress. So you start this momentum the wrong direction. So if we can disrupt that, we would expect to see changes in biomarkers. And one of our recent recent study, which was recently published, we showed that there was improvements in these immunoinflammatory markers indicative of having less inflammation or less exposure to something. The immune system just worked. It just was more optimal. Its readiness to perform, these various biomarkers can indicate, the readiness and the ability to prevent it from attacking itself. And all these individual biomarkers were improved in the direction that just show a healthier, in balance immune system. So with that, it goes back to who should take it. Well, in doing research, the hard part is creating models that mimic exposure. We like to think that, we live a safe and healthy life, but we know things like smoking and drinking and these things of excess are the true, like far extremes of exposures. And you really can't do a study saying, okay, well, here's an interesting study you can sign up for. We're going to have you drink in excess. We're going to have you smoke. And we're going to have you do these things that cause a physiological stressor so that you, and plus we're going to sleep deprive you. It's just no IRB in the world's going to approve such a thing. So what we're doing is we're looking at one model and we're getting ready to start looking at protocols on exercise, because we know that it's been shown before is endurance exercise and long exposures to endurance exercise, aerobic activity, what we see is that you see some impacts on immune and inflammatory function. So when we can kind of take a picture and use that as a model, we can say, see what this can do. So that's something else we're doing down the road to further research it. But for right now, our real focus is really that cellular health, premature aging positioning, knowing that there's an entire awareness around oxidative stress already. We're just taking a different approach than what the antioxidants do. Antioxidants are more about the process. We're dealing with the very nasty byproduct that's inevitable. It's going to be made if you get any exposure.
Yeah, so you've covered so much there from...
I apologize. I tend to get on a little bit of a rant when I get talking about this new stuff.
This is all great stuff. This is excellent. It's probably all stuff that we were curious about and
great. Find out. Good. So.
But I'm wondering, so again, as we talked about, kind of more of this proactive approach to cellular health, and you've talked a lot about, not only things like that you do that age you... personally, that you choose to do, smoking, drinking, also stressors, environmental stressors. I mean, mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about how that fits into the healthy aging game? Just a little bit more, sure. Is it, you call it a proactive approach to cellular health. I mean, so this is something as we age in particular, how do we think about this?
It goes back to my comment with that researcher, the discoverer said, is it should be, tongue in cheek, in our drinking water, but it really is about consistency. Mm-hmm. In that dose, we're looking at, or we're recommending, depending on the form of the product, because it is grass, so it could go into food and beverage. And we recommend about 50 milligrams. Well, it's part of our grass is 50 milligrams per serving. But for some of our, dietary supplement customers, it's the 100 milligram dose, assuming that they're only going to take that. The difference between the two is obviously one's food beverage. You have a chance a person might consume 8 or 9 servings. You don't know. It's what you have to kind of be prepared for. But when you're talking about dietary supplement, there's directions, there's guidance. Food and beverage, you don't tell people, take 8 servings of this drink or 2 servings of this drink a day. It's it's a beverage. So it's just part of it. So again, we go back to, for food and beverage, it's 50 milligrams. For traditional dietary supplement, recommending 100. We're doing more and more research on expanding and looking more about the efficacious dose and specific elements of it. But we know right now, one, it's safe, and two, that element of optimal dose, as we do more of these models, like I made the example of the exercise protocol, using that, we can kind of fine tune that a little bit more. It might be a little bit higher, but for right now, that's what we're recommending, is 100 milligrams. And kind of how it ties into the other part of the question you're asking is, we just don't know when we'll be exposed. And that's the trick of it. You don't know if tonight's the night you're not going to sleep well. By the time you wake up, guess what? You're already, you know, you haven't gotten a full night's rest. So that oxidative stress is already occurring. And that's one little element. Again, seldom is it just the one piece. Sure, something excessive like smoking and excessive drinking, sure, that's a pretty significant load of oxidative stress. But even the simple energy metabolism in our body creates oxidative stress. It's just, again, when do you think you're going to hit that threshold and you're going to spill over? It's impossible to predict. Even if you live the most healthy lifestyle, it might be exposure. You just spend a little more time outside doing an activity, or again, you didn't get enough sleep. Whatever the element is, elements are that you're exposed to, including your own, energy metabolism and your exercise regimen, whatever they are, it's too difficult to predict when you're going to hit this threshold where you would produce an ISO-LG. So the proactive approach is more than just being proactive about your cellular health. It's being proactive by taking the supplement daily. I think if we look at it as kind of that new daily essential, once a day is key. That's how I'd recommend, or, you know, depending on the formulation, a brand would want to use, you could, you know, split it in, you know, two servings per day kind of thing. And as more and more research comes out, we'll probably be able to provide more, definitive information on efficacy relative to dose. And, I look at this as kind of the H&B process. Early on, we thought, oh, it's got to be this, and it's got to be in this, and it's only targeted for this population. As more and more research is done, you feel very comfortable making claims as you broaden the consumer and make it even, broaden the consumer at the same time, making it more specific to certain applications. But for right now, I think truly for that cellular health, premature aging category, it's that proactive approach. So taking, 50 to 100 milligrams daily, I think is a great start. That's what I do.
Excellent. So we'll stay tuned for more research. Sounds like you guys have a lot going on that front.
It's very exciting too.
Spread the word too in the magazine. But any other final takeaways, anything that we didn't touch on that you want to cover?
I think you guys asked great questions. I think, again, when we talk about the subject of healthy aging, it's so important to look at, all those key variables of, enough sleep, exercise, proper nutrition. But unfortunately, we don't live that perfect life. Life is, a series of disruptions every day. So, dietary supplements are just that. They're used to supplement. And I think more and more consumers are getting that. And I think what's great about our industry is more and more customers that we interact are taking that same approach. And it is about being mindful of, hey, we can impact aging. Let's not tell them, it's all or nothing. It's about those consistency in our choices. Because as soon as we make it, you got to do this, like you have to exercise every day to maintain muscle. The reality is we're blocking away so many consumers by saying that. If we really focus on what works, it's the cumulative effort of every little piece put together. I think that's the biggest thing I see, what's moving the needle on the healthier aging. And we see that it's kind of, our medical community has always been reactionary. Where I think we play a role, and I know we're seeing it more and more with the personalized medicine, but it's the proactive approach that is such the better, healthier choice, and just staying ahead of the aging process. You can't prevent it. I mean, aging is a process, but let's optimize what we're doing to make sure the aging process isn't prematurely advancing more than it should.
Yeah, excellent. Great insights. And so I just want to thank you, Sean, for being
here.
Lots of information. Thank you to TSI Group for helping us to stay educated. And as you noted, there's more information on the website about formulation opportunities and research and just taking a deeper dive. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Maggie. Thanks, Sean. Thank you, Todd. Appreciate you guys.